and welcome to Stirring the Pot.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hello. I'm Linda Nygaard. I'm here in the studio today with Celine Demir. I almost did it again. Celine Demir. And we have a special guest today, which I'm really excited to introduce you to. His name is Greg Jetty. Hello, Greg.
Hi.
Welcome to the studio.
Hello.
It's
hello.
Really fun to have you here. We have lots of things to talk about today. Mm-hmm. But first, I need to tell you that you are listening to KVSH. LP or FM LP at 101.9 on beautiful Vashon Island, Washington. We're right downtown in our studio, and we just finished a pretty terrible rainstorm here. It was a big surprise, but here we are. And
clouds are still moving really fast.
They're moving fast. I think the wind is going to come up again. It feels like it anyway. So today we have a huge agenda of things that we're going to talk about, and among them are peonies and Puerto Rican cooking and history and a little bit of flavor from different areas of the country. Mm-hmm. We just have lots of things that we're going to talk about. And what I'd first like to do is introduce Heidi. Heidi's here too with us, and she's on the board today as usual. Hello, Heidi Skrypek.
Hey there. I'm just hanging.
And we know better than that. We know that she's going to have a comment or two or a question. She always does. So we couldn't do this without you, Heidi.
No,
so thank you.
No. We love our Heidi.
Yeah, we do. I'm really glad you're here. So hi, Celine. How are you?
Hi, Linda. Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. Finally.
I know. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. It feels like it's been a while.
We missed a couple of them due to illness.
Well, we kind of just canceled February.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are in April. Yeah. So have you been doing any interesting cooking? Any interesting food things? I know you went to Seattle not too long ago and had a fabulous lunch. At your favorite Turkish restaurant.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes. The little Turkish market that I usually go in Kirkland.
So tell me about this market. Where is it?
It's in Kirkland.
Okay.
It's called Koza.
And would you spell that, please?
K-O-Z-A.
Okay.
And it's a Turkish market, and they sell a lot of the Turkish products, and then they just leased or bought, I don't know, the next door. Mm-hmm. And now there's a little cafe there, and then they have Turkish food there. So when we went to get some Turkish products, mm-hmm. we were like, oh, there's a restaurant there now. And then so we just really, really enjoyed ourselves. It was really yummy. And they had döner, which is Turkish version of gyro, what everybody refers gyro, but it's a little bit different, mm-hmm. and I love it, and it was very authentic to the Turkish brand.
That was going to be my next question.
I need to take you there.
I'd love to go.
Yes.
Explain a little bit about the difference between a Greek gyro and a Turkish. Is it spices mostly?
I don't think it's the spices. I think it's more of the meat. So the gyro is like, it comes out as like a whole one piece.
Okay.
I think it's made with maybe ground beef, I don't know. But the döner is like pieces of meat, so when you cut it, it's like it's
shaving almost.
Yeah, it's like shaving. Okay. and it's not like one big piece.
Okay.
So it's cut very thinly.
And it still has tomatoes and yogurt, mm-hmm. and
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. It was so good.
It was so good. I was so happy.
Yeah. I bet you were. Well, we have to make a date and
yes.
do that.
Yes, we need to. We need to. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you've been wanting to go to that market too. So
we'll just never have time.
I know.
It's like our schedules don't match.
I know.
Selena's a very busy woman. I'm not nearly as busy as you are, but
So we'll make it this summer. How's that?
I think so.
The summers are usually
a little bit slower.
A little bit slower. Yeah. So we'll do it this summer.
We'll do it this summer. That'll be fun. And then we'll report back.
Yes.
I'm excited to do that. So I wanted to talk with you a little bit, Greg, about your life and what you've been doing. And Celine, feel free to jump in and ask questions or, you know, make comments. But I met Greg a couple weeks ago, I think, mm-hmm. and we had coffee together, and the three of us, Celine and mm-hmm. Greg and I, and we talked like nonstop about
couple hours.
Yeah, we did about food, and Greg has a very interesting background, and he's a cook, he's a peony farmer. He and his partner own. Does your peony farm have a name?
Yes. Vashon Peony Company.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they own Vashon Peony Company, which we will talk about later, because he told me a secret about peonies that I didn't know, and he'll share that with you as well. So, Greg, would you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you came from, a little bit of your family history? I know that you were born in New York, mm-hmm. and then you moved to Boston as a young child, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And then back to New York.
Eventually.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So tell me a little bit about your family history. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So I was born in New York, mm-hmm. in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. Which coincidentally was the place where my parents met.
Okay.
So they were both doing their dissertations, mm-hmm. and they're both psychologists.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
and so when I was very young, we moved to Boston. Where I grew up with my brother and our family there. Mm-hmm. In our home, it was really, really important to learn to cook at a very early age. Mm-hmm. And so our background is French Canadian Puerto Rican.
Okay.
And so my
mother. What a great combination.
I know, right? Yeah, it's not the most common one
in
the
box,
you know, but you get some really good flavors, mm-hmm. that way, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So on the Canadian side, it was pastry, and you know, my father would make tortillas, and mm-hmm. he was an excellent pastry cook.
Yeah.
And on my mother's side, it was pretty much anything you mm-hmm. could do with rice, stews. Oh gosh, we were roasting chickens, my brother and I, when we were like 7 years old.
Well, your mom thought it was really important that everybody learns how to cook.
Everybody learned how to cook, mm-hmm. in our household, and mm-hmm. knew what to do in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, take the lead, but sous chef. And it was an important part of communication and interaction in our household.
And did you have to clean up too?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
Oh yeah.
Because the cooking part's kind of fun, you know,
but
then you got to do
that. Yeah, you had to do it all.
And so, I'm sorry I interrupted you. You were talking about the process.
Oh, yeah, no. So it was an important thing and way to connect with my parents, mm-hmm. through food.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to the grocery store and we would talk over ingredients, mm-hmm. and, you know, I would experience certain spices and smells and sights and things. And so it was a really good way of intimacy, mm-hmm. with my mm-hmm. parents,
mm-hmm.
You know, that you can't really get through a phone or through a tablet
or
anything. You have to be engaged, you know.
And there's also that, you know, okay, we're going to sit down at the table and have a talk. Mm-hmm. That never works, you know. It's kitchen talk, food talk encourages, I think, relaxation and communication.
Mm-hmm.
And people are comfortable talking about food and what they like. Mm-hmm. And then through that, other subjects come up or other, you know, feelings, and it's
it connects you deeper.
It really does. It's
it really
a vehicle for a deep
you, yeah.
connection, I think. So, and it sounds like your family was very connected.
Oh yeah,
in food,
yeah,
and
yeah.
other ways.
Every night was around the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
My mother hated fast food.
Oh, did she?
Hated fast food.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I had McDonald's, you know, a handful of times,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when
Growing
I was
up.
A kid. Oh yeah.
Did
oh,
you
yeah.
feel bad about that?
No.
You didn't miss it?
No.
Because you had good food at home.
Excellent
yeah.
food at home. Yeah. You know, my dad was making Cuban sandwiches with my mother.
Oh, no.
You know, like a chicken McNugget doesn't really hold a candle.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And kids know that if they're offered the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
they really are. So tell me, you told me a little bit when we were having coffee about your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she has such an interesting story. And I'd mm-hmm. like to hear, I think people would like to learn a little bit about your mom.
Yeah. So my mother was born in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Left Puerto Rico when she was a little girl, probably around 3.
Okay.
And relocated to Washington Heights in New York.
Okay.
Which at the time and still today has a very strong Puerto Rico community population. There's a lot of culture in that
mm-hmm.
kind of area of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so she grew up with a very strong support community, and food was a really important part of her upbringing, both her and her sister.
Mm-hmm. It was part of the culture.
Part of the culture, part of, you know, the community from, again, buying the ingredients and, you know, spending the time cooking, because Puerto Rican food is not like a quick thing generally. You know, it's, you grind all of the ingredients and then you season it and then you let it set and then you cook it and then
it's a process.
Yes.
And then you divide it.
And then you divide it and then you use the leftovers and then
make
you
something
go
else
to somebody
with the
else's
leftovers?
House for the leftovers. Yeah. And you know, it's like it's a process.
And she learned about frugality in the kitchen when she was a little girl.
Oh yeah. I mean, you had to use everything. And I mean, they didn't have a ton of money, but cooking and food was very, very important. And so they learned to cook at a very early age. By the time my mother was 6, 7, 8, 9, 11 was cooking everything, you know.
That's amazing.
It really is.
And learned to cook from my grandfather. His name was Etchy. He was a tailor. And, you know, after we spoke, I went and I chatted with my mother just to make sure I got my facts straight. And my mom was telling me about my grandfather a little bit and said, well, you know, he was one of 17. And I was like,
oh, my goodness.
17? It's like, holy cow, the poor woman.
Oh.
And my mom was like, no. It's like they died in childbirth and they remarried. You know, so they became larger families and communities. And that was on the island in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And so that's just kind of how it was at his time. And so food was a very important part, you know, of his upbringing as well. And he wanted to make sure that his girls also didn't rely on anybody. And there was a resourcefulness there.
Well, it sounds to me like your mom adapted his philosophy fairly well, because she has accomplished some major things in her life.
Very much so, very much so. You know. And education was a way out, you know, had advanced and went to an Ivy League school at a very, you know, young age, and then NYU, and did her doctoral dissertation also at a very young age, and then met my father through NYU.
Oh, that's where they met. I was going to ask you where they met.
Okay.
So you come from a family of psychologists.
Yes.
That's interesting by itself.
Yes. We learned to adapt.
Yeah, I bet you did. I bet you did. And so what brought you to Vashon?
Yeah. So kind of a long story, but that's why we're here, I suppose. We were on the East Coast for work. I was working in New York at the time, and then I got recruited for work out here to work for Amazon. And so my spouse and I moved out to the peninsula. We were in Olala for a while, and we had bought a house there. And then at some point during the pandemic, you know, the kids were getting a little bit older, and we were having a conversation around the table and trying to figure out, well, you know, what is it that we want to do after the kids go to school? Do you want to hang out at home? Do you want to go back to the office? Like, what do you want to do? And so that's when we kind of stumbled into the idea of flower farming. And it, at first it was, you know, well, let's get some animals and let's do some fiber farming. And then, you know, we were like, okay, well, you know, we need a lot of animals to make that work. And so what else do we want to do? Well, you know, we really enjoy peonies. Okay, well, at the time we had about 5 acres. Much of it was wooded. And in order to make that work, we would have had to clear cut a lot of the woods, which, you know, we didn't want to do.
That doesn't feel very good.
No. It's, you know, you can't be a farmer and then clear cut these beautiful cedars and feel good about it.
Yeah.
And so then we were looking for lots. Mm-hmm. And so then we found this beautiful lot on Wax Orchard and said, let's go for it. Let's mm-hmm. make it work. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we started Vachon Peony Company. And the first year we just kind of let the land do its thing and mm-hmm. we watched and waited and kind of worked the soil over a little bit. And it was really fascinating to see the soil kind of take, you know, there was a lot of mustard seed that planted as a top crop, but it ended up, you know, flourishing. And mustard has this yellowish flower on it.
It does, it's pretty.
Yeah, yeah, and this field of mustard erupted, mm-hmm. and these bees then found their way onto the field.
Oh, my goodness.
And so then the field, every time the wind would blow, hummed. And you could see this wave of bees moving, and you know, then we were sold. And we were like, this is the right place for us. So, yeah. And then we decided to move permanently to Vachon because it was a lot going back and forth and off the peninsula.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And so your spouse does he have a gardening background? Or what's the interest? Where did the interest in peonies come from?
Yeah, so I think they had always loved peonies.
Okay.
And they had always loved flowers. And when we were putting together the business plan and figuring out, okay, how do we make floriculture work for us? Mm-hmm. We wanted to kind of plant a crop that would develop and grow over time, no pun intended, but you know, so we kind of stumbled into peonies, because it checked off a lot of boxes for us and we really enjoyed kind of the growth and the process.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about peonies a little bit and then we'll, and then we'll work our way into the food. How's that sound?
Of course.
Okay.
Sure.
So you told me some secrets about peonies that I didn't know.
They are edible.
Edible.
I just can't believe that.
I did not know that. Yeah. So tell me how I might use a peony if I want to eat it.
So the best way, the petals are probably the most desirable one. You can use it as a tea or a garnish, similar to how you would use an edible flower in like a salad.
And like in a salad or something. Yeah. And so pretty.
And they are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're so beautiful. Yeah. They're one of my favorites.
Mine too.
I just love them so much.
Yeah.
And so what about the leaves?
So you can use the leaves. They're a little bitter. Mm-hmm. And the only thing about the leaves you have to be careful about is some growers use pesticides and herbicides.
Yeah.
So unless you're kind of cultivating and growing it and like really certain that you want to use it, not recommended.
Okay.
You could use it. And then the root is a tuber. And so
like a potato.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So it's a starchy tuber.
And have you cooked that?
We have not.
You have not. You just heard about it.
Yeah. So we are more interested, I think, in the flower part of it.
I think everybody is really.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're so beautiful. And
that's right.
It's just so you must have a lot of ants.
Not so much, because when you harvest a peony, you harvest it at a certain stage, and you don't want their ants are attracted to the nectar.
Oh, okay. So you don't want them that advanced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So the right time to harvest a peony is right when the bulb gets a little bit spongy, like a marshmallow.
Oh, okay.
But before you start seeing that nectar around it, because then the ant will help the blossom open, and by the time it opens, it's kind of too late to harvest it
anyway.
Storage and ship it. Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, is your do you ship your peonies? What's your market, or are you?
So we're primarily wholesale.
Okay.
We supply Metropolitan Market, the grocery store.
Okay.
And we also supply local florists. On the island and off the island.
Okay.
We do have a small retail operation off the farm, so you can stop by when the peonies are in season.
So tell
when
me,
can we?
Yeah, when and where and what's the name and what's the address? So we
by. So we're on Wax Orchard. You can't really miss us. And we're called Vachon Peony Company.
Okay.
The peonies are in bloom mid-May to early June.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a short window.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we have tulips and hyacinths and all kinds of other stuff. Yeah.
Well, okay, we have more questions, but right now we need to take a little break and thank our sponsors for their wonderful
Voice
support.
Voice of Vachon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVachon.com.
Support for Voice of Vachon is provided by Palouse Winery. Award-winning wines are available for tasting on their covered patio noon to 5 Friday through Sunday. For private event inquiries, to see the music schedule, or to make a reservation, visit PalouseWinery.com.
Oh, we're back. Hello. And we're in the studio today. You're listening with Celine Demir and Greg Jetty and Linda Nygaard on Stirring the Pot with the kind assistance of Heidi Skrypek. And we're talking about all things food and flowers today.
Indeed.
Yes. And Greg, thank you for all that information about peonies. I love them. I've always loved them, but I don't really know anything about them. And I'm eager to come out and see the peony farm.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we'll make a date to do that one
come
of these
by.
Days real soon.
For certain.
I'd like to also talk a little about food.
That's the good stuff.
What do you think?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, so when we talked originally, we were talking about many different kinds of dishes, and as you said earlier, rice is a big staple in Puerto Rican cooking. So are there particular rice dishes? I know we wanted to talk about beans too, you know, because you have an affinity for a certain kind of bean.
There are so many things you can do with rice and beans, and it's overlooked. In my opinion.
Is it? Okay.
What's
your favorite thing to do with rice and beans?
Well, it's just very versatile. As, you know, you can do a meat base and have bacon or chorizo or any kind of pork. And with Puerto Rican cooking, you know, it starts with sazon. Right.
Oh, sure.
And so.
Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah.
In case somebody doesn't know.
Yeah. So it's garlic, cilantro, and red pepper. And that's the foundation. And with a little olive oil.
That's like the Holy Trinity that they have for
very much.
In Cajun cooking.
Yes.
You know, it's not those things, but they have the three things that are. You have to have it or else it's
And it's a very island thing, right? So in Cuban cuisine, you're going to get something very similar. That's the base for
everything.
All Puerto Rican cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, I really like to do that with rice and beans and then layer in some onions. And I mean, you can use all kinds of different beans, you know. But one recipe I thought I would bring up, because it's very accessible to everyone, is tostones or fried plantains.
Oh, yes, fried plantains.
Yeah.
I love them. All right. Well, I'd like a lesson in fried plantains, please.
Sure.
Tell me all about it.
Yeah, tell us. Yeah. So probably the best part is it's all about technique. So it's a very simple recipe. You just need a green plantain.
Okay, green.
And then you peel it. So you're going to slice it because it has this really tough exterior.
Right.
So you're going to peel it and then you want to slice it slantwise.
Like diagonally.
Diagonally.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. Because if you just slice it into little medallions, you have to fry it and then crush it. And then fry it again.
Okay.
And if you just make the medallions, it kind of breaks apart.
Okay.
But if you slice it diagonally, it maintains its integrity a little bit. And it's a little more forgiving.
Okay.
And so after you peel it and slice it into these diagonal sections that are maybe about an inch thick, you're going to want to soak it in salt water for a little bit. That removes some of the starchiness in the plantain.
Is that for a little bit? Is that 15 minutes?
15 minutes or so. Yeah, that should be fine. Meanwhile, you're going to heat up some olive oil in a pan because you're going to fry it. It's Puerto Rican food. You fry it. And so then when you're ready to start frying, you use a paper towel. You dry off all of the water, and the salt water helps it get crispy. So you get a better texture that way. So you're going to fry it. Make sure it's golden brown on all the sides. And then take out the plantains, and you're going to crush it. So you can do it, you know, people use a mallet, people use a little, it's almost like a castanet.
A little press.
Yeah, a little press. And then you're going to fry it again. Then once it's golden brown, you take it, you let it cool for a little bit. And I like to put a mixture of salt, garlic, cilantro, and olive oil on top. It's a mojo. And it just brings the whole thing together, and it turns into this like crispy, starchy, soft chip.
Deliciousness.
Yes. Yes.
For those of you who are listening, Greg's going to give us a recipe so that I'll put a link on the Stirring the Pot Facebook page tomorrow morning. And there'll be a link, and you can make your own tostones, which I intend to do. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please do.
And then, you know, we were talking earlier about typical Puerto Rican food. I mean, there are typical dishes and some that aren't so typical. But one typical and easily accessible dish was, I can't say the name. You'll have to say the name. But it was
pernil.
A roast pork shoulder.
Right. That's right.
Now, say the name again.
Pernil.
Bernili.
Pernil.
P-E-R-N-I-L.
Oh, pernil. Okay. Yeah.
That's right.
I've seen that word. Okay. Yeah. I've never done this, so tell me how I'm going to do that, and what do I look for in when I'm buying the pork?
Yeah. So it starts with a pork shoulder, also known as a picnic ham or a fresh ham. And the reason why that's important is because it comes with the skin on it.
Right.
And there's a layer of kind of fat underneath the skin, which is important for the moisture because it's a slow roast. And so the first step is you're going to rinse it off. You get it home, you rinse it off. You're going to pat it dry with a towel, and then you're going to score it with a sharp knife on the exterior.
Like you do a ham.
Like you do a ham.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're going to take a head of garlic.
Okay, a whole head.
Ooh, yum.
You can't be afraid of flavor.
No.
So you're going to take a whole head of garlic. You're going to grind it up with salt, pepper. I like to use orange juice, you know, as an acid. Some people do a little white vinegar. I've heard some people do Coca-Cola. I mean, it just depends.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
That's a Southern thing. There's a lot of people who cook a roast with Coca-Cola.
Really?
In the South. Yeah.
Because the acids help break down some of the meat.
And then there's there's the sweet, smoky Coke flavor.
Okay.
That's right.
I've never had it, but I've sure
read
about it.
I have to look into
that. So you're going to take a head of garlic, maybe a tablespoon of salt, olive oil enough to coat the whole thing, and you're going to start massaging it into all of the creases and the ridges. And you're going to let that sit. I like to let it sit overnight.
Okay. Do you wrap it?
I do.
And do you put it in the fridge, or do you let it sit at room temperature?
No, put it in the fridge.
Okay.
Yep. Got to let it set in the fridge. Cause it's uncooked.
Right.
It's not a
cured.
That's right. And so then early in the morning, you're going to get up and you shove the whole thing into the oven at 325.
Okay.
You're going to let it cook for 5 to 6 hours, depending on the time. And then the last 20 minute to half hour or so, you're going to crank up that heat.
Okay.
From 325 to 400, 425.
450 maybe.
Yeah.
Get it hot in there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that skin is going to melt on the inside, and it's going to form this crust called chicharrón.
Yeah, I know, cuarito. Chicharrón.
And people fight over that.
I would. You can't have
you
it. Carve it's mine.
It out. Oh, man. It's so good in sandwiches, too. It is
so
amazing.
Good.
Yeah. And then you're going to let it set, and that's it.
And then you're going to eat it.
And then you're going to eat it
and
for days.
And how do you eat it? Like, do you make sandwiches?
You can eat it so many different ways.
Over rice?
You can eat it over rice. You can eat it over plantains. Mm-hmm. You can carve it up and make Cuban sandwiches with it, which, you know, my personal favorite. But it's a very common meal around the holidays. Mm-hmm. And so over, you know, Christmas or something like that, people will eat it that way.
It reminds me a little bit of porchetta. The Italian with the skin on it and the scoring and the
That's
crispy.
Right.
And it's a lot like that. It's different spices, different marinating things, but it's a little bit of the same technique, I think. I have a question about the pot when you're roasting it. Do you have a preference for the kind of pot that you use? I know I'm particular about pots when I'm roasting a chicken or a roast. I like to use my big cast iron. Dutch oven because it's heavier, and there's just some reason it turns out better than if I use just a little, like a glass pot or something. Do you have a preference?
So my preference is to use a roasting pan and to make sure that there is a grate or something elevating off the bottom, because you want that crust all the way around
dry.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. So you want
so you don't
that,
want that
air.
Juice to be
the juice is great
underneath,
but not in
right,
the
right. Yeah. Exactly. Mm.
Oh, that just sounds delicious. I would love that. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite meals in the whole wide world is breakfast. What do you cook for breakfast that's interesting and different, or is it pretty typical?
Yeah. So I love breakfast. I like to do poached eggs over toast. Mm-hmm. I won my spouse over with a stuffed French toast.
yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, which I stuff with mascarpone cheese, and usually I make a candied pecan with bourbon and orange.
Oh my goodness.
Sounds delicious.
Really sounds good. Is Puerto Rican breakfast typical for, I mean, is it like ham and eggs and... Or is there anything special in Puerto Rican breakfast? Or did you learn something wonderful from your dad with the pastries?
Well, I think about my grandmother who, you know, passed away a few years back, but she was religious about her bacon. She would always have bacon with every meal. Mm-hmm.
Every meal?
And every breakfast.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Every breakfast. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but she was
like
a force.
This woman.
Yeah, Moni, she was a force. Usually it's a sweet pastry or something like that. Mm-hmm. They have these little guava filled puff pastries that I love, the little pasteles, that are great. Yeah. In our household, we do more like biscuits and less Puerto Rican
breakfast
fare.
I love biscuits. I do too. So are your kids learning to cook?
Very much.
Are they?
Yeah. My daughter is a little gourmand.
Is she? And how old are your kids?
6 and 8.
Yeah. They're really at a great teaching age.
She's so adorable.
Yeah. She loves to make manicotti.
Oh, does she?
Yes.
She's into process.
Loves the process. Yeah. So, you know, stuffing cheese in those little like pasta tubes is her ideal.
It's an artistic endeavor,
that dish.
It sure is. Yeah. Very cute. So, and Greg, you also had a catering business with your buddy, John. Hello, John.
He's enjoying
his martini listening to us for all the way from Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. Hi, John. We're jealous of your martini, actually.
I know. We were just thinking about that.
Yeah.
So tell us about your little catering business and the influences that his family had in your cooking.
Yes. So
Who is John?
So John is my best friend growing up.
Okay, hi, John.
We lived at each other's homes.
Okay.
And he lived just down the street from me for a number of years, and then moved to the other side of town. And I used to run over to his place. And he is Iranian. And,
So
his family had a lot of Persian cuisine.
Sure.
So amazing.
And they always used to feed me like I was starving.
Kid. I know.
Yeah. No, it was great. And talk about rice dishes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
They made these wonderful rice dishes with raisins and orange peels and
saffron
and sumac and kinds of stuff. So food was very, very important in his household as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we grew up together. And so we would invite each other over, and he would have, you know, Puerto Rican food, the pernil, and I would have, you know, kebab. And, you know, it would be 10 different Iranian men telling each other they're doing it wrong around the grill. And that's usually how it would go.
That's like the little Italian mothers in the kitchen, each of whom has her own best recipe and technique. So you were a caterer as well?
Yes. Yeah. We had a little catering business. I was working as a legislative aide in the Massachusetts State House at the time.
Oh, wow.
And had like three different jobs. Mm-hmm. And we were living together in above a Thai restaurant in Somerville. And
boy, talk about international cuisine. You know, it was right there.
Yeah. And so we had this little catering business because we're like, well, we live together. What else are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
We started catering, you know, parties and events. And I think we actually started our friend's family had a wedding, and it was a Israeli family, and so they had like three different wedding receptions, and one of them happened to be in Lexington where we were, and they needed a caterer but didn't want to spend a whole bunch of money, and we were like, we could do it. You know, we can cater a wedding for 80 people.
We know what to do.
So he was the bartender and I was on the grill, and we helped him cook and kind of took off from there. Mm-hmm. So we did that for a little while, and I went to grad school.
How fun.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of fun.
You also have spent some time in Emeril Lagasse's kitchen, right?
That was my dad. Yeah.
Okay, that was your dad.
Yeah. So the Venus de Milo.
Yes.
And food was a really important part of his growing up as well. So he was one of six, and all of the kids, you know, had catering jobs because that's what there was to do. And so he worked his way through college and grad school as a bartender and worked in kitchens.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
And he had you learned something about pie crust from him.
Oh, yeah.
What did you learn?
Yeah, he taught me how to make a flaky pie crust. He, we did it with lard. We did it with Crisco shortening. Mm-hmm. We did a half and half. You know, it just depended on what we were making at the time. Mm-hmm. But
did you ever make it with vinegar in it? Did you ever make a recipe with vinegar?
No, we didn't do a pie crust.
You know,
with
there's
vinegar.
Kind of a trend with vodka.
I was just going to say that. I heard about vodka.
It's the same thing with the vinegar. Yeah. Has that? I don't know.
It evaporates and makes it flaky.
Yeah. So I haven't done it either, but my ex-mother-in-law used to make hers with warm oil and warm milk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
It was weird, but it was good. It was really good. Yeah. So it's time for us to say thank you again for our sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island, on the web at thsrestaurant.com.
This portion of Voice of Vashon programming is brought to you by PSCCU, proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union, practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Yeah,
we don't have time. Hello. We're back. We're still having a little chat about how we're running out of time, and we have at least 20 more things we want to talk about.
Right?
Greg needs to leave the studio right now because somebody needs to get picked up from school.
That's true.
Yeah.
And we don't
Yeah, we don't want her to wait. So, Greg, thank you. It's been so much fun having you here, and I learned
Thanks
so much from you.
We'll
have to continue this chat at another time.
Yeah.
And if
I want us to have a pie event.
Yeah.
I love pie.
Do you?
So, yes.
Who doesn't?
So we Tom Conway, do you hear us? So we need to have a little bit of a pie. What is it? Bake off?
You know,
I'll make empanadas.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's what Tom and I were Tom and I were talking about empanadas and that we felt like that was the next thing we need to learn because he's like the king of pies. He really is. I used to really be proud of my pies, and then I met Tom. And so, you know.
And I love pies, and I can't make a good pie crust.
Oh, yes, you can.
No,
it's like I can't make biscuits. But anyway,
I believe in you.
Thanks, Greg.
You can do it.
At one time, a long time ago, I started a fundraiser. This was when I lived in Oregon on the Oregon coast. And it was a pie social. They used to have those in the olden days. You know, the ladies would bake pies, and then the men would bid on them. And whoever pie you bought, you ate pie with them when it was over. You know, it was kind of a community event and a way to raise money for, I don't know, an unfortunate family or a church or I don't know what. But anyway, we started it because we were it was for the land trust and some fish farm thing. Anyway, the pies have taken over the world down there now, and they are my lemon pie. I sold my lemon pie for $100 in that first auction. And now pies are going for like $200.
Oh my goodness.
Because people are, I mean, it's a way to donate and have some fun. Yeah. And, you know, so maybe we could think about doing that or something. Yeah. But I also wanted to remind listeners that you can go to the Peony Farm.
Yes.
And when the weekends are open, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you're open now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Saturday, Sunday is really good. And then on Tuesdays, you have a day for artists.
That's right. We open up the farm for artists.
I just think that's a wonderful thing. You can go paint or take pictures, or as Greg said, you can sit on a blanket and write if you want to. If you're an artist, you can come and just spend the day.
Yep.
And as the weather gets nicer, that'll be a really beautiful option for people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the peonies. I'm going to wait a week or two and see how they're. I'm going to see them in bloom too.
Yeah.
You know? But you have, and the tulips now I'm sure are beautiful. So.
And there are also alpacas.
And the alpacas are there.
Yes.
Oh, and you have a day for kids, don't you?
Yes.
So they can come and play with the animals.
That's right. Usually on Sundays.
And that's for special needs kids. Mm-hmm. You can come and spend some time with the animals.
Yeah. Get a little sensory time.
And are your animals pretty kind?
Oh, they're very sweet.
Yeah.
They're very sweet. Yeah.
They are.
And you have an Instagram page that our listeners can follow.
Okay.
Yes.
I have been following since I met Greg.
And
his spouse is also posting a lot of lovely bouquets lately. Mm-hmm. So there's some on the for sale. So
how do we find that?
It's Vashon Peony Company.
Okay.
And Instagram,
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll have a look for that then too. So again, thank you. It's wonderful getting
to
know you.
Thanks for having me.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Greg.
You're welcome.
I'll see you at the water taxi.
Yeah.
Oh, we're commuter friends.
That's the other story. That's how these two people met.
Yes.
Was on the water taxi.
And we bonded over food.
Yes. Yeah. We sure did.
I've heard so many good stories of people who have developed lifelong friendships from the water taxi.
Yeah.
You know, and I think from the regular ferry too, just the commute.
Yeah.
Because
every day.
Every day, and it's early in the morning, and nobody else wants to talk to you.
Oh, I will always talk to anyone.
I know
morning.
You do. Thank you, Greg.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye, Greg. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It was great to see you.
All right.
Well,
so
now what are we going to talk about?
What are we going to talk about?
Well, we have our... You know what? I want you to tell me about this new salad that you made that I don't know about.
Oh, yes.
And what it's called.
So
it sounds so good.
It's another Turkish food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called kisser. And this is...
With a K-A-S.
Yes, K-I-S-I-R.
Okay.
And so it's made with... small or thin bulgur,
mm-hmm.
because Bulgur has like several different sizes.
I didn't know that. I only knew one size of Bulgur.
So there's several different sizes, and you use the small, almost like the smallest one, I think, if I remember correctly. And you put that with boiling water to kind of plump up a little bit, cook. And then on the side, you saute onions, Turkish tomato paste, Turkish pepper paste. Those are like what I always use. It's staple to everything I cook. And so you saute.
So there's your holy trinity.
That it really is. Yeah. That really is. Yeah. And olive oil. So you just saute them really well until it has all the tomato and pepper paste into the onions. And then it takes that beautiful glistening color. It's so good, and it smells really yummy. And then you start putting some of the spices in there. So I put oregano, salt and pepper, cumin.
Cumin is always cumin.
It's always cumin. And pepper, peppermint, dry peppermint. Dry peppermint, sumac. And so you just kind of put that in, and then you take the plumped up Bulgur, and then you mix it, and then you just kind of mix it really well until that red color really marries well with the Bulgur, and it changes the color of the Bulgur from yellow wheat color into this orangey red. It's just, and then you just let it sit and then cool off, and then you kind of keep mixing it so that it cools off. And then on the side, you cut green onions, very thinly chop them, and you chop Italian parsley. And then I also put, you can put either lettuce. I usually put butter lettuce, but I didn't have butter lettuce this time. I had romaine lettuce. So I put romaine lettuce, like thinly slice them. And then once the whole mixture is cooled off, you kind of mix them all. And then you put olive oil, lemon juice, pomegranate sour, and you just mix them all up. And it's just, it's so delightful. And, so we do the soup club at Woman Hold the Key. Now the weather is kind of getting nicer. We said, well, let's add some salads in there. So this today is the first time we're doing the soup and salad mix, and I think we're gonna have a lot of salads. I'm not sure if anybody's bringing soup to I'm bringing this because there's salad. So that's what I'm bringing tonight.
And do you serve at room temperature, or do you want it cold from the fridge, or how do
It's room temperature is fine, cold is fine, but not warm.
Because
then it'll make the fresh,
it's mushy.
Yeah, it gets the fresh stuff mushy. Yeah. So it's either cold or room temperature. But it's so delicious.
It just sounds wonderful, and I'm really hungry right now after that talk with Greg.
Me too.
Now I want some pernil.
I know.
That sounded so good. How is your husband's baking going? What's he did he make I can't say the name of the Ramadan bread?
Oh, Ramadan pide. So he only the month of Ramadan is finished.
Right, we're done with that. Eid's done too.
The Eid is done. It was last weekend. So I think he only made Ramadan pide once during the whole month, and I was not happy about that. I was telling him that the other day, and I'm like, how come you only made once? Yeah. He hasn't been baking a lot lately. But it's still good whenever he makes it. This weekend, what he made is he made fry bread, what we call it pishi.
Oh,
so he said that he had a over rested dough in in the fridge, and then he goes like, "So what should I make? Should we make pishi or should we make some type of a pizza?" And I'm like, "Nah, I don't want a pizza." I said, "Let's fry him."
Yes, I love fried food. Anything fried.
I know, me too. So, and then he fried them, and then we ate that with feta cheese we bought from the Turkish market, Turkish feta cheese, tomatoes and cucumbers and green olives. And, you know, it was so good. And
our exchange student Ida ate it with mm-hmm. Nutella.
Oh, did she?
Which was so good.
I'm sure that was good too.
That was very good. And then, and I'm like, oh, I should put some. So I had a sour cherry preserves, and then I put a piece of feta cheese on it too, and it was really good. Oh, I'm like, oh my god, we ate so much of that fried bread. Pishi, it was so delicious.
It is so good,
so delicious.
I
so
grew
good.
Up with fry bread, and my mom used to. Yeah. She was a wonderful baker, and she made a lot of bread.
Yeah.
And whenever she was baking bread, you know, it was either lunch or snacks or whatever, she'd make some fry bread. But ours was always sweet, savory. Mm-hmm. We never had it savory. Yeah. And then after I grew up and left home, now they make what they call, quote unquote, Indian tacos.
Yeah.
Which are fry bread and then, you know, Mexican ingredients. And it's really good that way. But it never occurred to us that we had... We did lots of butter and lots of maple syrup.
Oh.
So it was just sort of like a pancake.
I grew up with it too. Mm-hmm. And but you would buy the dough from the bakery stores that we had in Istanbul.
Oh.
And because we had the bread was baked every day, so then they would sell the dough as well. So and let's say that your neighbor came to you for a 3 o'clock tea, and then they would send us the kids to the bakery to get a dough, and then they would start frying it. Yeah,
how nice.
And so it was very easy. And then every household had feta cheese, tomatoes, and green peppers, and I don't know, the olives, and then you just kind of serve it.
That's favorite. Like the favorite.
And it was always savory almost. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you would have, sour cherry preserves or strawberry preserves with it, or jam. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I always loved it with feta cheese. And
I love the idea that you could go buy the dough.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like here you can buy refrigerated pizza dough. I don't know.
I've tried that. It's okay.
Not great.
It's fine. It's not great, but it works.
It's fine.
It works.
Did you try it with fry bread?
Yeah, I fried it.
I thought you meant you did it for pizza.
Oh, no. I bought the pizza dough from the fridge, and then I fried it.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that it rests in the room temperature.
For a while.
Then it works better than if you just take it out of the fridge.
I'm still really eager to have Ulrich on the show with us, because
I know I've been keep telling him that
and I'm thinking, it'd be fun to spend some time in the bakery with him and see what see the different kinds of flour that he uses and the different kinds of techniques that he has. So we'll have to make that a plan. Are you listening, Ulrich? Are you listening,
Ulrich? Did you hear that?
I know. I was thinking, so I have a little story about bread, actually.
Yes.
The other day I was at Snapdragon, and I had a meeting there. I don't remember. Oh, yeah. I had a meeting there with my friend Joe, and we were just having a light lunch, and we were sitting in the little, for those of you who don't know, Snapdragon is a local vegetarian restaurant that we all love, and we were sitting in kind of the little bar area that's called the Black Cat Cabaret, and it was a really nice table, and they have a gorgeous bar in there. And on this bar were these 3 5-gallon mixing bowls, like the giant mixing bowls that they used to make bread in. And there were 3 of them sitting there. And I could see that it was bread raising in there because, Adam makes his own bread.
Yes.
And so it was just so funny because we got like a front row view of all the workings, because nobody else was sitting in the Black Cat Cabaret wasn't really open, so we were just sort of, we just kind of squatted in there.
Yeah.
And so we got to see, there was so busy running here and running there and carrying this and frying that and taking this and oh my God, all these things they had to do. And Adam is running back and forth like a madman. Whatever, carrying this over there and delivering this and taking that and telling somebody what else he needs. Mm-hmm. And it was like busy. And he was going 90 miles an hour past in the back of the bar past these three giant tubs of raisin bread, and he just went whack, whack, whack on each one of them as he was passing, you know? And so later I commented to him, and I said, that was one of the funniest things I've seen. I said, you were so busy, you were just hopping, 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 and then it was whack, whack, whack. And he said, well, yeah, I had to see how much time they needed. And it was like he could tell they needed about 15 more minutes just by whacking the top of the bread to see how it felt, you know? Mm-hmm. I just thought it was an amazing process. You know, we really, and as Greg was talking about his catering experience, we have no idea what it takes to do most of that stuff. Yeah. I did work for a catering company for a while, and it's way harder than you think.
Yeah.
It's way harder than you think. So
my old dream was to have a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And mine was too. And aren't you glad you didn't?
No, I'm actually glad. My husband was the one. Oh, honey, no.
Yeah.
He used to work in holiday villages on the Mediterranean coast of Turkey. And so they had restaurants as part of the holiday village. And so he was the general manager. Mm. So he kind of knew what it went into having the restaurant and having the whole operation. And he goes like, it's a lot of work. It does not look as sexy as it looks from outside. So
that's why they have the front of the house and the back of the house.
Yeah.
It's an amazing process that when people do a good job, you know, but it's back killing work.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've cooked a lot. I've cooked in a lot of kitchens. I've studied with some chefs. I've done a lot of fun things, you know, and cooked with a lot of different men and women in their home kitchens. Yeah. And I cooked for a living for a little while. I was like a personal chef for people. I hate to say personal chef because I really wasn't. I was a cook. I went in their house and I cooked. And man, it just killed me. It was really hard.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. But if you think about when you're having a Thanksgiving dinner and the amount of work that is.
Yeah.
If you're catering or working in the restaurant, that's every day then some. Heidi, you know this from from David's background. David's a chef.
Yep, he gets so game face even during the holidays when extended family over.
Mm-hmm.
Stay out of the kitchen.
Because he's a whirling dervish.
Mm-hmm. That's what they do. That's what they do. It's fast, it's hard, and it's hot.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Hot sauces, splattering things,
spilling things, burning things, smoking things.
All of it.
I'm in the same way too, though. Like when I'm cooking, I don't want people to come and just
hang out
or like either. Try to help me. I'm like, let me just do my thing.
Yeah,
it's true. I respect it. Yeah.
I have a certain way of like, I know how things are supposed to taste like, and I know the process and I know people are trying to help. And I'm like, no, just let me, even like it's as simple as a mashed potato. Like I have my way on making mashed potato I really want it to taste that way.
And I want it this way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can get a little bit like kitchen czar. It's okay. You guys just go sit there and I'll just do it.
Have another drink.
Yeah. Please have another drink.
When David moved in, suddenly the magnet went up. There's like magnet strips for knives.
Oh, yeah.
And my crappy little American Chicago knives get put in the drawer and shing, 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 all the wuss tops and the shang blades and the nice Japanese
Hankel.
Knives. It's like, okay. I totally happily yield to you.
You know, it really does make a difference. I have two good knives. The rest of my knives are kind of funky.
Yeah.
They're fine. Yeah. They're fine for me because I'm just a home cook, you know, but I have two good knives that I just cherish them.
Mm.
And there's nothing more dangerous than a dull knife.
Oh, it's true.
You know, I just about killed myself with an onion one time because you know how slippery an onion can be.
Yes.
And you need that knife to slide through it, not to slip on it.
No.
I've done some serious damage to my fingers with dull knives, and I don't do that anymore.
My son moved out, and then he took my favorite knife.
Uh-oh.
I'm like,
you
really?
Didn't have this discussion?
I'm like, out of all of those knives, why did you pick the one that I love using it all the time?
Oh, that'll be a good gift for him.
Right.
Knives are important.
Knives are very important.
I love the visual though, Heidi, of your knife magnets.
Oh, yeah.
Yours are in a drawer now.
Oh, they're gone.
They're gone.
It's like, okay, yeah, my knives suck. And now I have like a really nice knife that's just mine.
Oh, good.
Which is wonderful.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you're also a good cook.
Thank you, Linda.
Well, I keep begging for that Greek vegetable thing that you keep promising
me.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I'll get there.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're out of time.
We are already. Well, the time goes by so fast.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
See you in a couple of weeks or a month or, you know, when the spirit moves us.
Yeah.
And we will have, our show will be online tomorrow as well.
And it's sunny outside.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's enjoy.
Thank you, Celine. It was great to see you.
Thank you, Linda.
And Heidi, thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.